The sun seemed lower than it had in the stable yard, but she knew that was only imagination. For once, they had gained a clear jump on the shadow.
From behind a screen of white wrought iron, Moradin watched the last of the horses vanish through the gateway, and then the tall young woman and the four warders. It was possible they were carrying away some item he could use, an Angreal attuned to men, perhaps, but the chances were small. For the rest, the Terangreal, the greatest likelihood was that they would kill themselves trying to puzzle out how to use them. Samael was a fool to have risked so much to seize a collection of no one knew what. But then Samael had never been half as clever as he thought. He himself would not disrupt his own plans merely on the off chance to see what scraps of civilization he could find. Only idle curiosity had brought him here. He liked to know what others thought important. But it was dross. He was about to turn away when the outlines of the gateway suddenly began to flex and tremble. Transfixed, he watched until the opening simply melted. He had never been a man to give way to obscenities, but several rose in his mind. What had the woman done? These barbarous rustics offered too many surprises. A way to heal being severed, however imperfectly, that was impossible. Except that they had done it. Involuntary rings. Those warders and the bond they shared with their Aes Sedai. He had known of that for a long, long time, but whenever he thought he had the measure of them, these primitives revealed some new skill, did something that no one in his own age had dreamed of. Something the pinnacle of civilization had not known. What had the girl done?
Great master.
Moradin barely turned his head from the window.
Yes, Madic?
Her soul be damned, what had the girl done? The balding man in green and white, who had slipped into the small room, bowed deeply before falling to his knees. One of the upper servants in the palace, Matic, with his long face, possessed a pompous dignity that he tried to maintain even now. Moradin had seen men who stood far higher do far worse.
Great master, I have learned what the Aes Sedai brought to the palace this morning. It is said they found a great treasure, hidden in ancient days, gold and jewels and heartstone, artifacts from Shiota and Aharon, and even the Age of Legends. There are said to be things among them that use the One Power. It is said that one can control the weather. No one knows where they are going, Great Master. The palace is aquiver with talk, but 10 tongues name 10 different destinations.
Moradin went back to studying the stableyard below as soon as Madoc spoke. Ridiculous tales of gold in Quendiar held no interest. Nothing would make a gateway behave that way, unless... Could she actually have unraveled the web? Death held no fear for him. Coldly he considered the possibility that he had been within sight of an unraveling web. One that had been unmade successfully. Another impossibility casually offered up by these... Something Madoc had said caught his ear.
The weather, Madoc?
The shadows of the palace spires had barely lengthened from their bases, but there was not a cloud to shield the baking city.
Yes, great master. It is called the Bowl of the Winds.
The name meant nothing to him.
But a Terangreal to control the weather?
In his own age, weather had been carefully regulated with the use of Terangreal. One of the surprises of this age, one of the smaller, it had seemed, was that there were those who could manipulate weather to a degree that should have required one of those Terangreal. One such device should not be enough to affect even a large part of a single continent. But what could these women do with it? What if they used a ring? He seized the true power without thought, the saw billowing black across his sight. His fingers tightened in the wrought iron grill across the window. The metal groaned, twisting, not from his grip, but from the tendrils of the true power, drawn from the great lord himself that wreathed around the grillwork, flexing as he flexed his hand in anger. The great lord would not be pleased. He had strained from his prison to touch the world enough to fix the seasons in place. He was impatient to touch the world more, to shatter the void that contained him. And he would not be pleased. Rage enveloped Moradin, blood pounding in his ears. A moment past, he had not cared where those women went. But now... somewhere far from here. People fleeing ran as far and as fast as they could, somewhere they felt safe. No use sending Maddock to ask questions, no use squeezing anyone here. They would not have been fool enough to leave anyone behind alive who knew their destination. Not to Tarvalin, to Althor, to that band of rebel Aes Sedai. In all three places he had eyes, some that did not know they served him. All would serve him before the end. He would not allow chance slips to spoil his plans now. Abruptly he heard something other than the thundering drumbeat of his own fury, a bubbling sound. He looked at Maddock curiously and stepped back from the spreading puddle on the floor. It seemed that, in his anger, he had seized at more than the wrought-iron screen with the true power. Remarkable how much blood could be squeezed from a human body. He let what remained of the man fall without regret, indeed thinking only that when Maddock was found, the Aes Sedai would surely be blamed. A small addition to the chaos growing in the world. Ripping a hole in the fabric of the pattern, he traveled with the true power. He had to find those women before they used this bowl of the winds. And failing that, he disliked people meddling with his carefully laid plans. Those who did so and lived, lived to pay. The golem stepped into the room cautiously, nostrils already twitching with the scent of still hot blood. The livid burn on its cheek seemed like a live coal. The golem appeared to be merely a slender man, a little taller than average in this time, yet it had never encountered anything that could harm it. Until that man with the medallion. What might have been smile or snarl bared its teeth. Curious, it peered around the room, but there was nothing beyond the crushed corpse on the floor tiles. And, feel of something. Not the one power, but something that made it itch, if not quite in the same way. Curiosity had brought it here. Parts of the grill over the window were crushed, pulling the whole thing loose at the sides. The golem seemed to remember something that made it itch in that manner, yet so much of what it recalled was fogged and dim. The world had changed, as it seemed, in the blink of an eye. There had been a world of war and killing on a huge scale, with weapons that reached across miles, across thousands of miles. And then there was this. But the golem had not changed. It was still the most dangerous weapon of all. Its nostrils flared again, though it was not by scent that it tracked those who could channel. The one power had been used below and miles to the north. To follow or not. The man who had wounded it was not with them. It had made sure of that before leaving the high vantage place. The one who commanded it wanted the man who had wounded it dead, perhaps as much as he did the women. But the women were an easier target. The women had been named, too, and for the time being it was constrained. For its entire existence it had been compelled to obey one or another human, but its mind held the concept of not being constrained. It must follow the women it wanted to follow. The moment of death, when it felt the ability to channel vanish along with life, produced ecstasy, rapture. But it was hungry, too. And there was time. Where they could run, it could follow. Settling fluidly beside the mangled body, it began to feed. Fresh blood, hot blood, was a necessity. But human blood always held the sweetest savor.
Chapter 3. A Pleasant Ride. Farms and pastures and olive groves covered most of the land around Ebudar, but many small forests stretched a few miles across as well. And while the ground was much flatter than the Rannan hills to the south, it rolled and sometimes rose in a prominence of 100 feet or higher, sufficient to cast deep shadows in the afternoon sun. All in all, the country provided more than enough cover to keep unwanted eyes from what might have passed as some odd merchant's pack train. nearly 50 people mounted, and almost as many afoot, especially when it had warders to find unfrequented paths through the undergrowth. Elaine did not sight a mark of human habitation beyond a few goats cropping on some of the hills. Even plants and trees used to heat were beginning to wither and die, yet at any other time she might have enjoyed merely seeing the countryside. It could have been 1,000 leagues from the land she had seen riding down the other bank of the Eldar. The hills were strange knobby shapes, as though squeezed together by huge, careless hands. Flocks of brilliantly hued birds soared up at their passing, and a dozen sorts of hummingbirds flitted away from the horses, hovering jewels on blurred wings. Thick vines hung like ropes in some places, and there were trees with bundles of narrow fronds at the top for foliage, and things that looked like green feather dusters as tall as a man. A handful of plants, fooled by the heat, struggled to put out blossoms, bright reds and vivid yellows, some twice as wide as her two hands. Their perfume was lush and sultry, came to mind. She saw some boulders she would have wagered had once been toes on a statue, though why anyone would make a statue that large with bare feet she could not imagine. And another time the way led through a forest of thick fluted stones among the trees, the weathered stumps of columns, many toppled, and all long since mined almost to the ground for their stone by local farmers. A pleasant ride, despite the dust the horse's hooves raised from parched soil. The heat did not touch her, of course, and there were not very many flies. All the dangers lay behind them. They had outrun the Forsaken, and no chance any of them or their servants could catch up now. It could have been a pleasant ride, except... For one thing, Avienda learned that the message she had sent about enemies coming when least expected had not been delivered. At first, Elaine felt relief at anything to change the topic from Rand. It was not the jealousy come back. Rather, more and more, she found herself wanting what Avienda had shared with him. Not jealousy, envy. She would almost have preferred the other. Then she began really hearing what her friend was saying in a low monotone, and the hair on the back of her neck tried to stand. "You can't do that," she protested, reining her horse closer to Avienda's. Actually, she supposed Avienda would not have much trouble drubbing Kurin or tying her up or any of the rest, if the other sea folk women stood still for it anyway. "We can't start a war with them, certainly not before we use the bowl. And not over this," she added hastily. "Not at all." They certainly were not going to start a war before or after the bowl was used. Not just because the Windfinders were behaving more high-handedly by the hour. Not just because... Drawing breath, she hurried on. "If she had told me, I would not have known what you meant. I understand why you couldn't speak more clearly, but you do see, don't you?" Avienda glared ahead at nothing, absently brushing flies away from her face. "Without fail, I told her," she grumbled. "Without fail. What if he had been one of the shadows sold? What if he had managed to get by me through the gateway, and you with no warning? What if..." She turned a suddenly forlorn gaze on Elaine. "I will bite my knife," she said sadly, "but my liver may burst for it." Elaine was about to say that swallowing her anger was the right thing to do, and she could pitch as large a fit as she wanted, so long as she did not hurl it at the Afa'an Mier. That was what all that about knives and livers meant. But before she could open her mouth, Adelius brought her rangy gray up on her other side. The white-haired sister had acquired a new saddle in Ebudar, a gaudy thing worked with silver on pommel and cantle. The flies seemed to avoid her for some reason, though she wore a scent as strong as any of the flowers. "Pardon me, I could not help overhearing that last." Adelius did not sound at all apologetic, and Elaine wondered just how much she had overheard. She felt her cheeks coloring. Some of what Avienda had said about Rand had been remarkably frank and straightforward. Some of what she had said had been, too. It was one thing to talk that way with your nearest friend, quite another to suspect someone else had been listening. Avienda seemed to feel the same way. She did not blush, but the sour look she shot at the brown would have done Nynaeve proud. Adelius merely smiled, a vague smile as bland as water soup. It might be best if you gave your friend there free rein with the Afa'an Mir. She peered past Elaine at Avienda, blinking. Well, a loose rein. Putting the fear of the light into them ought to be sufficient. They're almost there already, in case you haven't noticed. They're much more wary of the savage Aiel, forgive me, Avienda, than they are of Aes Sedai. Marilla would have suggested it, but her ears are still burning. Avienda's face rarely gave much away, but right then she looked as puzzled as Elaine felt. Elaine twisted in her saddle to frown behind her. Marilla rode abreast with Van Deen, Kariana, and Saritha not far back, all very studiously looking at anything except Elaine. Beyond the sisters were the sea folk, still in single file, and then would come the knitting circle, keeping themselves out of sight for the moment just ahead of the pack horses. They were threading away through the glades of truncated columns. 50 or 100 long-tailed red and green birds winged over their heads, filling the air with chattering cries. Why? Elaine asked curtly. It seemed foolish to add to the turmoil already bubbling just below the surface, and sometimes on the surface, but she had seen no hint of the fool in Adelius. The brown sister's eyebrows rose in apparent surprise. Maybe she was surprised. Adelius usually thought anyone should see what she saw. Maybe. Why? To restore a little balance, that is why. If the Afa'an Mi'er feel they need us to protect them from an Aiel, it might be a useful balance against... Adelius paused slightly, suddenly absorbed in adjusting her pale gray skirts. Other things. Elaine's face tightened. Other things. The bargain with the sea folk was what Adelius meant. You may ride with the others, she said coolly. Adelius made no protest, no attempts to press her argument. She just inclined her head and let her horse fall back. Her small smile never altered a whit. The older Aes Sedai accepted that Nynaeve and Elaine stood above them and spoke with Egwene's authority at their backs, but the truth was, that changed little beyond the surface. Perhaps nothing. They were outwardly respectful. They obeyed. And yet... After all was said and done, Elaine, at least, was Aes Sedai at an age when most initiates of the Tower still wore novice white, and very few had reached the accepted. And she and Nynaeve had agreed to that bargain, hardly a display of wisdom and acumen. Not just the sea folk getting the bowl, but 20 sisters going to the Afa'an Mi'er, subject to their laws, required to teach anything the Windfinders wanted to learn, and unable to leave until others came to replace them. Windfinders allowed to enter the tower as guests, allowed to learn whatever they wished, leave whenever they wished. Those alone would make the hall scream, and probably Egwene as well, yet the rest... Every last one of the older sisters thought she would have found a way around making that bargain. Perhaps they really could have. Elaine did not believe it, but she was not sure. She did not say anything to Avienda, but after a few moments the other woman spoke. If I can serve, honor, and help you at the same time, I do not care whether it serves some Aes Sedai end. She never seemed to take it in that Elaine was also Aes Sedai. Not completely. Elaine hesitated, then nodded. Something had to be done to temper the sea folk. Marilla and the others had displayed a remarkable forbearance so far, but how long would that last? Nynaeve might explode, once she actually turned her attentions to the Windfinders. Matters had to be kept as smooth as possible for as long as possible, but if the Afa'an Mi'er went on believing they could stare down any Aes Sedai, there would be trouble. Life was more complex than she had imagined back in Camelin, no matter how many lessons she had received as daughter-heir. So much more complicated since she entered the tower. Just don't be too emphatic, she said softly. And please, have a care. There are 20 of them, after all, and only one of you. I wouldn't want anything to happen before I could help you. Avienda gave her a grin with a good bit of wolf in it, and drew her dun mare off at the edge of the stones to wait for the Afa'an Mi'er. From time to time, Elaine glanced back, but all she saw through the trees was Avienda riding next to Curin, speaking quite calmly and not even looking at the sea folk woman. Certainly not glaring, though Curin seemed to stare at her with considerable astonishment. When Avienda thumped her horse back up to join Elaine, flapping her reins, she would never be a horsewoman, Corinne rode forward to speak with Ranila, and a short time later, Ranila angrily sent Rain in to the head of the column. The most junior of the windfinders sat her horse even more awkwardly than Avienda, whom she pretended to ignore on Elaine's other side, just as she ignored the small green flies buzzing around her dark face. "Ranila Dencalan Bluestar," she said stiffly, "demands that you snub in the Aiel woman, Elaine Aes Sedai." Avienda grinned toothily at her, and Rainin must have been watching at least a little, because her cheeks reddened beneath the sheen of sweat. "Tell Ranila that Avienda is not Aes Sedai," Elaine replied. "I will ask her to be careful. No lie there, she had, and would again. But I can't make her do anything." On impulse, she added, "You know how Aiel are." The sea folk had some very odd ideas of how the Aiel were. Rainin stared wide-eyed at a still-grinning Avienda, her face going gray, then jerked her horse around and galloped back to Ranila, bouncing in her saddle. Avienda gave a pleased chuckle, but Elaine wondered whether the whole notion had been a mistake. Even with a good 30 paces between them, she could see Ranila's face swell up at Rainin's report, and the others began to buzz like bees. They did not look frightened, they looked angry, and the glares they directed at the Aes Sedai ahead of them grew baleful. Not at Avienda, at the sisters. Adelais nodded thoughtfully when she saw that, and Marilla just barely failed to hide a smile. At least they were pleased. If that had been the only incident during the ride, it would have taken the edge off any enjoyment of flowers and birds, but it was not even the first. Beginning shortly after leaving the clearing, the knitting circle had made their way forward to Elaine one by one, all but Christian, and no doubt she would have come too had she not been ordered to keep Ispan shielded. One by one they came, each hesitant, smiling timorously until Elaine wanted to tell them to act their ages. They certainly made no demands, and they were too smart to ask straight out for what already had been denied, but they found other paths. "It occurred to me," Rihanna said brightly, "that you must want to question Ispan Sedai quite urgently. Who can say what else she was up to in the city besides trying to find the storeroom?" She pretended to just be making conversation, but from time to time she darted quick looks at Elaine to see how she was taking it. "I'm sure we'll take over an hour to reach the farm, the way we're going, perhaps two, and you certainly don't want to waste 2 hours. The herbs Nynaeve Sedai gave her make her quite talkative, and I'm sure she would sit up for sisters." The bright smile faded when Elaine said that questioning Ispan could wait and would. Light! Did they really expect anyone to ask questions riding through forests on paths that barely deserved the name? Rihanna rode back to the other kinswomen, muttering to herself. "Forgiveness, Elaine Sedai," Chilaris murmured a short time later, the traces of Murundi clinging to her accent. Her green straw hat matched some of her layered petticoats exactly. "Your forgiveness, if I intrude." She did not wear the red belt of a wise woman. Most of the knitting circle did not. Famela was a goldsmith, and Eldes supplied lacquerware to the merchants for export. Chilares was a rug seller, while Rihanna herself arranged shipping for small traders. Some worked at simple tasks. Kirstian ran a tiny weaver's shop, and Dimana was a seamstress, though a prosperous one. But then in the course of their lives they had all followed many crafts, and used many names.
"Ispan Sedai appears to be unwell," Chilares said, shifting uneasily in her saddle. "Perhaps the herbs are affecting her more than Nynaeve Sedai thought. It would be terrible if anything happened to her. Before she can be questioned, I mean. Perhaps the sisters would look at her? Healing, you know."
She trailed off, blinking those big brown eyes nervously. As well she might, with Sumiko among her companions. A glance back showed the stout woman standing in her stirrups to peer past the windfinders until she saw Elaine looking and sat back down hurriedly. Sumiko, who knew more of healing than any sister except Nynaeve, perhaps more than Nynaeve. Elaine simply pointed to the rear until Chilaris colored and reined her mount around.
Marilla joined Elaine only moments after Rihanna left, and the Gray sister made a much better pretense at simple chat than the kinswoman had. In her manner of speaking, at least, she was poise itself. What she had to say was another matter. I wonder how trustworthy those women are, Elaine. Her lips pursed in distaste as she brushed dust from her divided blue skirts with a gloved hand. They say they do not take in Wilders, but Rihanna herself may well be a Wilder, whatever she claims about failing her test for accepted. Sumiko as well, and certainly Christian. A slight frown for Christian, a dismissive shake of her head. You must have noticed how she leaps at any mention of the tower. She knows no more than she might have picked up in conversation with someone who really was put out. Marilla sighed, regretting what she had to say. She really was very good. Have you considered that they may be lying about other things? They could be dark friends, for all we know, or dupes of dark friends. Perhaps not, but they are hardly to be trusted very far. I believe there is a farm, whether they really use it for a retreat or not, or I would not have agreed to this. But I will not be surprised to find a few ramshackle buildings and a dozen or so Wilders. Well, not ramshackle. They do seem to have coin, but the principle is the same. No, they are simply not trustworthy. Elaine began a slow burn as soon as she realized the direction Marilla was taking, and it grew hotter. All this slipping around, all this may and could, so the woman could insinuate things she herself did not believe. Dark friends? The knitting circle had fought dark friends. Two had died. And without Sumiko and Iaina, Nynaeve might be dead instead of Ispan a prisoner. No, the reason they were not to be trusted was not because Marilla feared they were sworn to the shadow, or she would have said so. They were not to be trusted because if they were not to be trusted, then they could not be allowed to hold Ispan. She swatted a big green fly that had settled on Lioness's neck, punctuating Marilla's last word with a loud crack, and the Gray sister jerked in surprise. How dare you, Elaine breathed. They faced Ispan and Phalion in the Rahad and the Golam, not to mention 24 or more toughs with swords. You weren't there. That was hardly fair. Marilla and the rest had been left behind because Aes Sedai in the Rahad, obvious Aes Sedai, might as well be trumpets and drums for the attention they attracted. She did not care. Her anger grew by the moment and her voice rose by the word. You will never suggest such a thing to me again. Never! Not without hard evidence. Not without proof. If you do, I'll set you a penance that will make your eyes pop. No matter how high she stood above the other woman, she had no authority to set her any penance at all, but she did not care about that either. I'll make you walk all the way to Tar Valon, eating nothing but bread and water the entire way. I'll put you in their charge and tell them to slap you down if you say boo to a goose. It dawned on her that she was shouting. Some sort of gray and white birds went flittering past overhead in a broad band, and she was drowning out their cries. Drawing a deep breath, she tried to calm herself. She did not have a voice for shouting. It always came out as a shriek. Everyone was looking at her, most in astonishment. Avienda nodded approvingly. Of course, she would have done the same had Elaine plunged a knife into Marilla's heart. Avienda stood beside her friends no matter what. Marilla's Kyrianin paleness had become dead white. I mean what I say, Elaine told her, in a much cooler tone. It seemed to make even more blood leave Marilla's face. She did mean every word. They could not afford that sort of rumor floating among them. One way or another she would see it done, though the knitting circle very likely would faint. She hoped that was the end of it. It should have been. But when Chilares left, Saritha replaced her, and she too had a reason the kinswomen were not to be trusted. Their ages. Even Christian claimed to be older than any living Aes Sedai, while Rihanna was over 100 years more than that, and not even the oldest of the kin. Her title of eldest went to the oldest of them in Ebu Dar, and the rigid schedule they followed to avoid notice had a number of still older women off in other places. It was obviously impossible, Saritha maintained. Elaine did not shout. She very carefully did not shout. We will learn the truth eventually, she told Sarissa. She did not doubt the kinswomen's word, but there had to be a reason why the kinswomen looked neither ageless nor anything near the ages they claimed. If she could only puzzle it out. Something told her it was obvious, but nothing leaped up. Said what? Eventually, she added firmly when the brown opened her mouth again. That will be enough, Sarissa. Sarissa nodded uncertainly and fell back. Not 10 minutes later, Sibella replaced her. Every time one of the kinswomen came to make her roundabout plea to be relieved of Ispan, one of the sisters came soon after to offer the same plea. All save Marilla, who still blinked whenever Elaine looked at her. Perhaps shouting did have its uses. Certainly no one else tried to be so straightforward in attacking the kin. For instance, Van Deen began with discussing the sea folk and how to counter the effects of the bargain made with them, why it was necessary to counter them as much as possible. She was quite matter-of-fact, with never a word or gesture to lay any blame. Not that she needed any. The subject did that, however delicately handled. The White Tower, she said, maintained its influence in the world not by force of arms or persuasion, or even by plotting or manipulation, though those two she brushed past lightly. Rather, the White Tower controlled or influenced events to whatever extent they did, because everyone saw the tower as standing apart and above, as more even than kings or queens. That, in turn, depended on every Aes Sedai being seen that way, as mysterious and apart, different from everyone else. A different flesh. Historically, Aes Sedai who could not manage that, and there were a few, were kept out of public view as much as possible. It took Elaine a little while to realize that the thrust of the conversation had shifted away from the sea folk, and to see where it was headed. A different flesh, mysterious and apart, could not have a sack thrust over its head and be tied across a saddle. Not where anyone who was not Aes Sedai could see, anyway. In truth, the sisters would be rougher on Ispan than the knitting circle could possibly make themselves be, just not in public. The argument might have borne more weight had it come first, but as it was, Elaine sent Van Deen packing as quickly as she did anyone else, and saw her replaced by Adelais, right after Sibella was told that if none of the knitting circle could understand what Ispan was mumbling, then none of the sisters was likely to either. Mumbling. Light. The Aes Sedai took their repeated turns, and even knowing what they were up to, sometimes it was hard to see the connection at first. By the time Kariana began by telling her that those boulders really had been toes once, supposedly on a statue of some warrior queen nearly 200 feet high, Ispan stays where she is, she told Kariana coolly, without waiting for more. Now, unless you really want to tell me why the Shiotuns thought of putting up a statue like that. The green said ancient records claimed it had worn little more than armor, and not a great deal of that. A queen. No? Then, if you don't mind, I'd like to talk with Avienda alone. Thank you so much. Even being curt did not stop them, of course. She was surprised they did not send Marilla's maid to take a turn. None of this would have happened had Nynaeve been where she was meant to be. At least Elaine was sure that Nynaeve could have quelled the knitting circle and the sisters both, in short order. She was a great one for quelling. The problem was that Nynaeve had glued herself tight to land's side before they left the first clearing. The warders scouted ahead and to both sides of their path, and sometimes to the rear, only riding back to the column long enough to report what they had seen, or give directions on how to avoid a farm or a shepherd. Birgitta ranged far, never spending more than moments with Elaine. Lan ranged farther, and where Lan went, Nynaeve went. No one's making any trouble, are they? She demanded, with a dark stare for the sea folk the first time she followed Lan back. Well, that's all right, then, she said, before Elaine had a chance to open her mouth. Spinning her round-bellied mare like a racer, she flicked the reins and galloped after Lan, holding her hat on with one hand, catching up to him just as he vanished around the flank of the hill ahead. Of course, then there really was nothing to complain about. Rihanna had made her visit, and Marilla hers, and everything seemed settled. By the next time Nynaeve appeared, Elaine had suffered through a number of disguised attempts to have Ispahn turned over to the sisters. Avienda had spoken to Curan, and the Windfinders were on a slow boil. But when Elaine explained, Nynaeve simply looked around, frowning. Of course, right at that moment, everyone had to be where they belonged. The Atha'an Mi'er wore glares, true, but the knitting circle were all behind them, and as for the other sisters, no group of novices could have appeared more well-behaved and innocent. Elaine wanted to shriek. "I'm sure you can handle everything, Elaine," Nynaeve said. "You have had all that training to be a queen. This can't be anywhere near so... Drat the man, he's going again. You can handle it." And off she went, galloping that poor mare as though it were a warhorse. That was when Avienda chose to discuss how Rand seemed to like kissing the sides of her neck, and incidentally how much she had liked it. Elaine had liked that when he did it to her, too, but however used to discussing this sort of thing she had become, uncomfortably used to it, she did not want to talk about it right then. She was angry with Rand. It was unfair, but if not for him, she could have told Nynaeve to stop treating Lan like a child who might trip over his own feet and attend to her own duties. She almost wanted to blame him for the way the knitting circle was behaving, too, and the other sisters, and the Windfinders. "It's one of the things men are for, taking the blame," she remembered Linny saying once, and laughing while she did. "They usually deserve it, even if you don't know exactly how." Not fair. Yet she wished he were there long enough for her to box his ears, just once. Long enough to kiss him, to have him kiss the sides of her neck softly. Long enough to... "He will listen to advice, even when he doesn't like hearing it," she said abruptly, her face reddening. Light, for all her talk about shame, in some areas Avienda had none, and it seemed that she herself no longer had any either. "But if I tried to push him, he dug in his heels even when it was plain that I was right. Was he that way with you?" Avienda glanced at her and appeared to understand. Elaine was not sure whether she liked that or not. At least there was no more talk of Rand and kissing. For a while, anyway. Avienda had some knowledge of men. She had traveled with them as a maiden of the spear, fought beside them. But she had never wanted to be anything but Far Darais Mai, and there were gaps. Even with her dolls as a child, she had always played at the spears and raiding. She had never flirted, did not understand it, and she did not understand why she felt the way she did when Rand's eyes fell on her, or 100 other things Elaine had begun learning the first time she noticed a boy looking at her differently than he did at the other boys. She expected Elaine to teach her all of it, and Elaine tried. She really could talk to Avienda about anything, if only Rand had not been the example used quite so often. If he had been there, she would have boxed his ears, and kissed him, then boxed his ears again. Not a pleasant ride at all. A miserable ride. Nynaeve made several more brief visits before finally coming to announce that the Kin's farm lay just ahead, out of sight around a low, rounded hill that appeared ready to fall on its side. Rihanna had been pessimistic in her estimate. The sun had not fallen nearly 2 hours' worth. "We'll be there very quickly now," Nynaeve told Elaine, not seeming to notice the sullen stare Elaine gave in return. "Lan, fetch Rihanna up here, please. Best if they see a familiar face right off." He whirled his horse away, and Nynaeve turned in her saddle briefly to fix the sisters with a firm eye. "I don't want you frightening them now. You hold your tongues until we have a chance to explain what's what. And hide your faces. Pull up the hoods of your cloaks." Straightening without waiting for any reply, she gave a satisfied nod. "There, all settled and all right. I vow, Elaine, I don't know what you are moaning so about. Everyone's doing exactly as they should, so far as I can see." Elaine ground her teeth. She wished they were in Camelin already. That was where they were heading once this was done. She had duties long overdue in Camelin. All she had to deal with there was convincing the stronger houses that the Lion Throne was hers, despite her long absence. That and handling a rival claimant or two. There might not have been any had she been there when her mother vanished, when she died. But the history of Andor said there would be by now. Somehow it seemed ever so much easier than this. Chapter 4. A Quiet Place. The Kinn's farm lay in a broad hollow surrounded by three low hills, a sprawling affair of more than a dozen large, white-plastered buildings with flat roofs, gleaming in the sun. Four great barns were built right into the slope of the highest hill, a flat-topped thing with one side that fell away in steep cliffs beyond the barns. A few tall trees that had not lost all of their leaves provided a modicum of shade in the farmyard. To the north and east, olive groves marched away and even up the sides of the hills. A sort of slow bustle enveloped the farm, with easily over 100 people in evidence despite the afternoon heat, carrying on all the everyday tasks, but none quickly. It might almost have passed for a small village instead of a farm, except that there was not a man or a child to be seen. Elaine did not expect any. This was a waypoint for kinswomen passing through Ebu Dar to elsewhere, so there would not be too many in the city itself at one time, but that was a secret matter, as secret as the kin themselves. Publicly, this farm was known for 200 miles or more as a retreat for women, a place for contemplation and escape from the cares of the world for a time, a few days, a week, sometimes longer. Elaine could almost feel serenity in the air. She might have regretted bringing the world into this quiet place, except that she also brought new hope. The first appearance of the horses coming around the leaning hill produced far less stir than she expected. A number of the women stopped to watch, but no more than that. Their clothing varied widely. Elaine even saw a sheen of silk here and there, but some carried baskets and others buckets, or great white bundles of what had to be wash. One held a pair of bound ducks by the feet in either hand. Noblewoman and craftswoman, farmer and beggar, all were equally welcome here, but everyone did a share of the work during her stay. Avienda touched Elaine's arm, then pointed to the top of one of the hills, a thing like an inverted funnel skewed to one side. Elaine added a hand to the shade of her hat, and after a moment saw movement. Small wonder no one was surprised. Lookouts up there could see anyone coming from a long way. A middling woman walked out to meet them short of the farm buildings. Her dress was in the Ebu Dari style, with a deep, narrow neckline, but her dark skirts and brightly colored petticoats were short enough that she did not need to hold them up out of the dust. She did not wear a marriage knife. The kin's rules prohibited marriage. The kin had too many secrets to keep. "That's Elise," Rihanna murmured, reining in between Nynaeve and Elaine.